Greetings, all. This is your host, Kim, with another episode of How to Get Away with Law, an unofficial podcast for the hit TV show on ABC, How to Get Away with Murder. And we are going to start with the ABC.com recap of episode 108, He Has a Wife. 6 months before the second autopsy was done on Lila Stangard, the cocaine-snorting murder victim tells Rebecca that she met a new guy. She calls him Mr. Darcy because he has a wife. Jumping forward, Annalise asks Sam if he knew Lila was pregnant. He promises he didn't. He doesn't even know if it's his. Annalise asks Wes to keep the pregnancy news from Rebecca. That doesn't happen. Wes blabs to Rebecca, who then blabs to Nate. A DNA test would help make the murder case go away. This proves to be a tough project, but maybe there's something on Lila's phone they can use. Wes is furious when he catches Rebecca and Nate conspiring. She thinks Annalise is setting them up. Jumping back again to July, Lila tells Rebecca she lost her virginity. Moments later, she gets the infamous penis text on her phone. A short time after that, Lila is crushed. She tells Rebecca that Mr. Darcy wants to end things with her. She believes that bad things happen when you have sex. Gretchen Thomas is a successful real estate agent, wife, and mom. She takes prescription sleeping pills that sometimes cause her to perform actions while completely unconscious. She was caught on video dragging her dead nanny's bloody body through her home. She even tried to clean her off. Gretchen doesn't want to take the stand. If a jury thinks she's guilty of killing someone she loved, then she'll agree. Gretchen's son, Cody, testifies that it was the pills that caused his mother to kill. During a tough cross-examination, the teen says he was having an affair with the nanny. He loved her. Annalise is furious at Connor for not prepping her. She's ticked at Bonnie, too. She chastises her in front of everyone. Connor pays a visit to Cody. He learns the kid got a sexually transmitted disease from the nanny. Michaela knows there is a specific antibiotic for what he had. She believes this info is the key to winning the case. Gretchen's husband was also having an affair with the nanny. He killed her in a jealous rage. Annalise rests her case. She tells her furious client that one day she'll thank her for what she did. Bonnie tries to chat with Sam about the night Lila was killed. They are interrupted by Annalise, who privately tells Sam that this is what happens when you're with somebody else's husband. Sam wants her to know that he's the one who broke them. Bonnie finally gets to have her talk with Sam. She met Lila the night she was killed. She shooed the distraught girl away before she could get to Annalise. She knows Sam knew about the pregnancy. The two of them agree to not devastate Annalise with the news. Then they share a kiss. A teary-eyed Bonnie tells Annalise that Sam kissed her in order to get her to do what he wanted. She says he's not a good man. Annalise takes a moment to let this sink in. Then she fires Bonnie on the spot. In other relationship news, Laurel and Frank get hot and heavy in the backseat of his car. Later, they hop all over each other back at his place where they are interrupted by Sasha, Frank's girlfriend. Surprise! Michaela's future mother-in-law pops by the office. The subject of the prenuptial agreement is the main topic of conversation. It doesn't go well. Later, Michaela shows up at Asher's place. She swipes the trophy when he's not looking. Wes pounds on Rebecca's door. The music is cranked, but that doesn't mean anyone is inside. Connor and an obviously upset Laurel watch as Wes retreats back to his place. The cell phone is gone. Elsewhere, Annalise tells Sam that she's asking for DNA samples from all the men in Lila's life, including her teachers. She's going to get the truth one way or another. Well, guys, we finally see Lila alive, doing coke with Rebecca. Was not exactly respecting that, but hey, she's palling around with Rebecca, who's a drug dealer, so maybe I should have caught that in advance. Bonnie got put in an odd place, staying while Sam had to admit more details about his relationship with Lila, and says he did not know she was pregnant. I don't know. Sam's shady. I don't trust anything he says. He could say he's wearing a white shirt while wearing a white shirt, and I still wouldn't believe him. I know Gretchen's pain and all. I can't really, empathize with it, but, I've been on Ambien before and have done things I don't remember, including breaking up with a girlfriend, so, oops. It's believable that you would sleepwalk and not know what the heck you're doing, is all I'm trying to say. Annalise says she doesn't want Wes to tell Rebecca that the father is not Griffin because she learned her lesson keeping things from him, but told him not to tell Rebecca. I believe she knew he'd tell her anyway. Really? Wes? Annalise can't be that stupid. Rebecca tells Nate, and he wants her to get a hair sample from Sam. She is so unsmooth when she visited, and Sam was the only one there, so wow. She's not made for this sort of thing. She's not a very good criminal, unless it's selling drugs, and she's doing a damn good job selling it to sorority girls at the sorority house. Good faith basis. Witness intimidation. Well, we're going to the law terms to find out exactly what these two terms are. We're going to start with good faith. And that means honesty, a sincere intention to deal fairly with others. Good faith is an abstract and comprehensive term that encompasses a sincere belief or motive without any malice or the desire to defraud others. It derives from the translation of the Latin term bona fide, and courts use the two terms interchangeably. The term good faith is used in many areas of law, but has special significance in commercial law. A good faith purchaser for value is protected by the Uniform Commercial Code, which every state has adopted. Under sections 1-2019 and 2-403 of the code, a merchant may keep possession of goods that were bought from a seller who did not have title to the goods. If the merchant can show he or she was a good faith purchaser for value, to meet this test, the person must be a merchant, must have demonstrated honesty in the conduct of the transaction concerned, and must have observed reasonable commercial standards of fair dealing and trade. A buyer would likely meet these requirements if the purchase proceeds in the ordinary course of business. If, on the other hand, the purchase took place under unusual or suspicious circumstances, a court might conclude that the buyer lacked good faith. Where a non-merchant purchases property that the seller lacks legal title to convey, the issue of good faith is known both as the innocent purchaser doctrine and as the bona fide purchaser's doctrine. If the purchaser acquires the property by an honest contract or agreement and without knowledge of any defect in the title of the seller or means of knowledge sufficient to charge the buyer with such knowledge, the purchaser is deemed innocent. In both commercial and non-commercial law, persons who in good faith pay a fraudulent seller valuable consideration for property are protected from another person who claims legal title to the property. If a court establishes the purchaser's good faith defense, the person who claims title has recourse only against the fraudulent seller. Strong public policy is behind the good faith defense. Good faith doctrines enhance the flow of goods in commerce as under them, buyers are not required in the ordinary course of business to go to extraordinary efforts to determine whether sellers actually have good title. A purchaser can move quickly to close a deal with knowledge that a fraudulent seller and a legitimate title holder will have to sort the issue out in court. Of course, the purchaser will be required to demonstrate to the court evidence of good faith. And I would like to apologize for the sound of the ambulance and fire truck out there. I worked for a school of medicine, and of course there's usually all of that noise and stuff going on in the background because I do these podcasts at work, so I apologize for the sound, but hey, it's the lunch period, might as well get this podcast out. Now we're going to move on to what intimidating a witness is, which, you know, should be self-evident, but here we go. Even seemingly benign conversations between criminal defendants and potential witnesses can result in an accusation of witness tampering. Interfering with a witness's testimony or cooperation in a criminal case is a criminal act that can be a misdemeanor or a felony. Intimidating or tampering with a witness involves trying to get a witness to lie, say certain things under oath, alter or destroy evidence, or not testify or cooperate with authorities at all. Examples include asking a witness to testify in a certain way, to lie, to not testify, to not report a crime, or to not cooperate with the police. Offering a witness a bribe, money, material goods, or some other benefit. Threatening a witness with physical violence or property damage. Threatening the witness's family members or loved ones. And preventing a witness from attending a legal proceeding such as a court hearing or deposition. Some states' statutes criminalize intentionally influencing a witness by any means. Others require use of force, threat, of force or use of intimidation or coercion. Under the first type of statute, simply asking a witness to testify in your favor constitutes witness tampering. The other statutes require that the person accused actually threatened or intimidated the witness. Coercion and intimidation can involve threats other than physical violence or property damage. An employer could threaten an employee's job or promise a promotion if the employee will testify in a certain way or refuse to testify. A witness also could be threatened with harm to his business or reputation. Now, who can be accused of witness tampering or intimidation? Well, the idea of witness tampering or intimidation probably brings to mind a defendant in a criminal case threatening a witness. But the defendant is not the only person who can be accused of or commit this crime. If a person threatens or tries to influence a witness testimony on behalf of the defendant or the prosecution, he has committed a crime. If a relative or friend of the defendant threatens a witness or someone involved in or supporting the prosecution tries to bribe a witness, for example, both have committed witness tampering. If the defendant is involved in witness tampering committed by another person, he also can be charged with the crime. For instance, the defendant pays someone to contact a witness or is involved in planning a threat or attack on a witness. He could be charged with witness intimidation or conspiracy to commit the crime. All right. I hope you feel properly educated, as we're going to get back into the episode review. Now, poor Connor and Bonnie getting Annalise's wrath. I know she was upset, so she had to snap. And especially with everything that was going on with Bonnie, you know, I can understand her wrath. But, you know, I felt like she came down on them pretty harshly. Now we see when Asher invites Bonner to his pre-bonfire party, which is pretty darn amusing, don't you think? He's so goofy, but he's so adorable. Bonnie attempts to talk about Sam not being at Yale the night Lila died, but Annalise interrupts. Annalise thinks the losing of the case and the miscarriage are karma for cheating with another woman's husband, which I wouldn't say no to. Cody's flaming penis. How amusing. Him and his father with a flaming penis. I think it's trichomoniasis is what it's called, but dang. This maid was totally getting it on. And I have to say, Cody's really goofy looking. I hope he grows into himself. Gretchen getting mad that Annalise exposed her husband and ruined her family was ridiculous. It made me not like her. I understand it tore apart her family, and she's like a high-paced person who has to take sleeping pills because she's always going, going, going. But that was just, maybe that was just her reaction to finding out what her husband did and that her son was involved in these sexual acts. But come on, lady. I agree with Annalise. Yeah, she'll be thankful later. Lila had an encounter with Bonnie before her death so she could tell Annalise about Sam, but Bonnie stops her. So, looks like Lila's trying to do the right thing after she did the wrong thing, or she wants to lash back out at Sam because he got her pregnant and just left her hanging. So I can understand why she was upset. Bonnie confronts Sam about knowing about the pregnancy. He kisses her and she pulls it. There was nothing there at all. I thought there was, but I was wrong, which is good, because I'm getting tired of Sam. And poor Bonnie, she's so much on her plate and just so much going wrong. And, you know, she didn't ask for this pass, though she didn't exactly pull away all that quickly, so, I guess, maybe there could have been something, but I'm starting to get less and less convinced that there was something between Sam and Bonnie. Bonnie tells Annalise and says she did not know who Lila was until the missing signs went up. Her getting on her knees and apologizing and telling Annalise that Sam knew Lila was pregnant and that he kissed her was heartbreaking. So was Annalise firing her. And I just felt terrible for Bonnie in this episode and where this is going to lead. I mean, I think she needs Bonnie. I'm still not sure what Frank and Bonnie's, what their roles are, what they did, and how they ended up working for Annalise, but I feel like there probably was a lot of years and friendship built up and that she may need Bonnie. I mean, Bonnie is just like, she's always lurking in the corner. Anybody notice that? She's always just around, especially when she's trying to reprimand Frank when she ends up breaking that rule herself. But at the same time, I mean, she's pretty stealth. She's around. She's useful. But I don't know, Annalise is going through a hard time, but I hope she reconciles with Bonnie, because Bonnie's just the stealth mouse. Alright guys, that's all for episode 8. If you want to get in contact, you can always email, whether you type it out or send an audio file, and you can send that to howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com. You can get on Facebook and like the page at How to Get Away with Law in the search option. Or you can also tweet me, and that would be at Get Away with Law. So guys, until next time, this is your host, Kim, signing off.